The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
The death last month of Hugh Hefner reopened a debate about the Playboy founder and the world he created. When pornography was still a kind of secretive enterprise, Hefner put naked and near-naked women in full color right into the respectable households of America. Hefner thought he was an instigator of the sexual revolution, and he was making a great blow against Puritanism.
It's an attempt to replace the old legalism. It's certainly not a rejection of monogamy as such, but very much an attempt, in the case of premarital sex. There really hasn't been any moral code in the past except simply a thou shalt not.
And, well, that's a code, isn't it?
Well, perhaps. I don't think it's a very realistic one.
Not everyone saw it in such high-minded terms. Some thought women were being exploited, and that divide is still present in how people think about Playboy's legacy. Janice Moses was just 19 when she took a job in the photography department at Playboy, and she rose through the ranks to become a photo editor. Janice left Playboy before her daughter Michelle was born and didn't really talk with her much about the experience. Michelle followed her mother into the magazine business, although she works here at The New Yorker, where you don't get all that much nudity.
When you were 19 and you entered that environment for the first time, like, had you ever seen pictures of naked women before entering into that environment?
You know, it's interesting. That was one of Vince's questions during our interview. You know, have you ever been around nude models before? And quite honestly, I so badly needed a job that, of course, I had to tell a lie and say, yeah, oh, yeah, I've been around nude models before in art class. But truly, I hadn't. And, you know, at that time, Playboy was a much broader-based magazine. So it's not like there were naked ladies running around the studio all day.
And actually, I would love to hear a bit more about your personal interactions with Hefner. I know that when you became a photo editor, you were presenting your work to him on a very regular basis. What was he like to interact with?
He was intimidating, for sure. In fact, thankfully, I found these few pictures of what it was like to meet with him. And that's me sitting right
now. All right, so what's going on? There's a picture that I'm looking at. My mom is a blonde bombshell.
Look how we're looking at each other.
Mm-hmm. And he's holding his pipe in hand, wearing a silk pajama shirt.
Always.
And they have the mock-up of the magazine in front of them, it looks like.
Yeah, that was, you know, what we called, I think we called it the Blue Book or the Black Book or something. It was a pasted-up book. That's how magazines were done in those days.
Oh, we have one?
The Brown Book. It was a pasted-up version of the book. And, you know, we went over it page by page, line by line, picture by picture. And when you think about how he was so involved in every detail, and for him, money was no object. It was all about perfection, whether it was re-editing the copy or reshooting the pictures, to the sometimes the great frustration of some of the people that worked for him, because he was very challenging and he had his view of perfection of everything.
Like, did you all feel like there was a mission that Playboy was on that you were a part of? Can you tell me, like, how that felt from the inside?
You take me back to a memory of a photo shoot that we did very early in my career. And we were on the campuses of, you know, the top five colleges, or what we thought were the top five colleges. And so we went to Antioch in Yellow Springs, Ohio. And we got there, and the kids were so upset. And a group of them literally stole the boxes of clothing that we had shipped from the fashion department to put on the models. And they said, we want to confront you, and we want to have a conversation with you. So they sat us down in a room in their student union. And these were the earliest days of demonstrations on campus. And so these kids, the boys, did a nude-in demonstration, and clusters of boys came through the windows running naked across this this panel. Of course, I was terrified for my life. I wanted to get out of there. And
did you understand their objections to Playboy? Did you understand what their grievances were?
Well, they thought we were the establishment.
But not to simplify it.
I don't want to simplify it, but for me, I must confess I could only scratch my head, because I was on the inside, where I had so much freedom to do and be and work and express myself, that I was like, what's so conservative about us? What are they seeing? I'm just here.
Did you hear from the students? Did they describe to you, or did they give you a good sense of what they were objecting to?
As we walked out of that student union, this young college girl came up next to me. We were very close in age at the time, actually. And, you know, there she was, braless, in her little kind of hippie top, and being oh so bold. And, you know, she just was, she was upset because she thought we were taking advantage of women. And yet she was standing there braless and free to be who she was, because we gave women the freedom to do that. So it was confusing for me.
Mm-hmm. Did you, it's, you know, that's a great story. She's like your foil. She's like the life you could have led in some ways.
Yeah.
Did you feel any envy
but
for
you
her
see me
to be so bold?
Of course I did. Here I am in my quilted top, because let's describe this picture. I'm in a quilted tapestry jacket. Mm-hmm. You know, God forbid anybody should see me braless.
Is that how you felt in the office? God forbid anyone should see me braless.
No, I have pictures here.
Well, no, you don't need to show them. But I mean, like, how did you feel about your own body in that setting, where women's bodies were the centerpiece?
Well, you know, let's go back to why women.
Did you get a lot of sexual attention?
Let's go back to why women burned their bras mm-hmm. at that moment. Mm-hmm. It was Gloria Steinem and Betty Friedan who came on the scene and made us powerful. And I was not attracted to what the girls in the secretarial pool wanted to do and wanted to talk about. I wanted to go out and be with the guys and test the film and search for the light and, you know, help set up the productions. And it was all there for me. They were like, sure, show up. Anything you want to do. Here, take this, do that. Be responsible for that. And, you know, by 21, I had a lot of responsibility. By 23, I was running the photo studio. By then, we had 6 staff photographers, 5 staff stylists, painters, carpenters, electricians, and I was running this whole little section of the business of the photo studio, the logistics, the production, the set building. You know, it was, it fell on my desk at a very young age, because I felt this freedom to be able to do these things.
If you imagined your career, if you imagine it happening again, and you had that much responsibility and that much freedom at a place that wasn't Playboy, that didn't have the same social or political mission or influence, do you think that would have changed the whole thing for you? Do you think that it could have been a religion somewhere else, or was there something really Playboy-specific for you that made it what you believed in, that made it what you wanted to work for?
That's a difficult one to answer simply. You know, I landed this job as a kid and just stayed. And you know, I've told you, there were times long before I left that I was very unhappy there, that I didn't like what the magazine was about. I didn't think some of it was funny. I didn't endorse it philosophically. I didn't want to see it on the pages. I didn't want to ask, you know, for people to do the things I was asking them to do.
What kinds of things? What kinds of things made you uneasy?
I didn't like seeing two girls together in a sexual context.
Well, that's...
That's me. That's my opinion.
I also don't like that answer.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, that's just right, you know.
That sounds kind of homophobic, Mom.
Well, interesting. I didn't think of it as homophobic at that point. I thought of it as for the entertainment of the viewer.
The entertainment of the male viewer?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So that's what you were starting to notice.
Yeah. That's what bothered me. That was when it all came together at the same moment when it was Playboy and Penthouse and Hustler trying to compete for attention and sales. And so we wanted to push the envelope on, you know, how explicit or how suggestive. And it just went to a place that I wasn't comfortable with. And that's when I became unhappy with being there and doing this work. And so then I would just focus on what my job was. You know, when you're unhappy in a job, you don't leave the next day. You have to let it wear at you for a very long time until one day you go, I need out. I can't live my life. I remember the day that the guy in the next office got a raise, and he was a guy, and he got more than me, and we did the same job. I did more than he did, I thought. I'd produced 7 centerfolds that year, and he'd produced some pictorials. And I never thought that was fair. So for me, my rights as a woman were always very important. And it turned out to be the very best decision. I have you. I have my own wonderful business. And it's all good.
And, you know, I was remembering, when I was 6 years old and Britney Spears came out with the album Hit Me Baby One More Time. I remember wanting it so badly, asking for it, and you got me the CD, but I know that you were sort of uncomfortable with the way she presented herself in this, like, skimpy schoolgirl outfit for an audience of young people. So I wonder if you could talk a little bit about where maybe that sense of discomfort came from for the kind of media that I was consuming and how it differed from what you thought about the work that you did then.
This has more to do with me as a woman than me as an employee of Playboy.
Mm-hmm.
It has to do with the me inspired by Gloria Steinem. And I felt, not Britney Spears particularly, but there was a moment in time around that time when there was a...
In my childhood.
In your childhood, when there was a bevy of female singers who came on the scene in very provocative clothing. There's another one who was competing.
Christina Aguilera.
Thank you. beyond provocative. Who I thought were taking us, we women, backwards. So the way we dressed the women in the magazine was not the way we walked around the office. Okay? There were no nude women walking around the office. In fact, there was actually nobody walking around in low-cut dresses with cleavage. Everybody was pretty buttoned up. In fact, if I pulled out enough pictures, you would see how really buttoned up everybody was. But I just felt that at the time of the Christina Britney era, there was a shift in female behavior in the everyday world and offices and just on the street that I didn't think was going to forward them getting more respect and equal pay for the work that they did or have a voice that was going to be rewarded or be heard or be respected.
So what was shown in the pages of the magazine entered into our everyday world and inspired the behavior of people outside of the realm of entertainment.
This is true.
It's been really special for me to hear these stories I'd never heard before, so I'm really glad we did this.
Thank you so much.
Janice Moses, in conversation with her daughter, Michelle. Janice managed the photography studio at Playboy and was a photography editor. Michelle is on the editorial staff of The New Yorker.
The
WNYC Studios is supported by the Natural Resources Defense Council. Using science, the law, and people power, NRDC is committed to confronting the climate crisis, protecting public health, and safeguarding nature. They address the impact of fossil fuels on communities and our environment. They help protect wildlife, public lands, and irreplaceable ecosystems that all living things depend on. They work to enact policies for clean air, clean water, and access to nature for all. You can help NRDC safeguard the Earth for future generations. Visit nrdc.org/WNYC for more information.